It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond, along with Kyle from Strange Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum. Bubba, man, how are you?
Doing well, Dave. Hope you are.
Yeah, we'll have Kyle will be joining us in a little while. Bubba, we've got a lot of great guests today. You always do a great job, but you've outdone yourself today.
Yeah, we definitely have a full show planned for you. So we'll have Jim Lighthall. He's the play-by-play voice of the USF Bulls. Of course, the Bulls will be in Williams Arena, Menchie's Coliseum on Tuesday night, 7 o'clock on ESPN3. We'll also catch up with Robin House. He was a basketball letter winner for the Pirates from 88 to 92. He's an Eastern North Carolina guy, walked on to the program under Mike Steele, earned a scholarship, and also played for Eddie Payne and Coach Dooley his final season. And then last but certainly not least, we'll catch up with Steve Robertson. Steve is with Jeans Page, and Jeans Page is the Mississippi State 24/7 site. Obviously, they've had a lot going on. Steve does an excellent job as their co-publisher, and he'll talk about the decision to fire Joe Moorhead and who may be in the running for that job.
Yeah, lots of stuff going on, and one of the candidates we'll be talking about is Skip Holtz. You know, Bubba, I think that certainly I was thinking about this on campus today. By the way, folks, we have the practice report. We'll be doing that, and that's over on SoundCloud. So just want to let everybody know, if you're looking for practice stuff, a lot of times we put that up on SoundCloud or practice report. We have, of course, overtime that we do for basketball after the game, so keep that in mind. Very proud of the program. I think that I was telling someone earlier today, Bubba, at practice, I really believe Coach Dooley is working really hard. He's done an excellent job, I think, so far. And I really am hoping to see, just want to get your thoughts, and then we'll go to Jim. We'll bring him in before we get to Jim. Just get your thoughts about the game. What's your mindset going into tomorrow night's game, Tuesday night?
Obviously, 6-8, not where we want to be. That goes without saying, but very pleased with the way things seem to be progressing over these last five games or so. Obviously, had our four-game win streak snapped out at Wichita State, but we took the 24th-ranked Shockers down to the wire despite certainly not – it's not like we went out there and knocked down 15 threes and came up shy. We only hit four threes, and we turned it over 17 times in Wichita State. And they certainly didn't play their best game either, and we had something to do with that for sure. They did struggle from the free throw line, but a lot to build on. Another just remarkable performance by Jaden Gardner, 29 points, a season high, and he just continues to impress. And the nation, a lot of folks certainly already know about him, but those like Robbie Hummel, they said they had heard about him, and just seeing him for the first time in person, he's undoubtedly one of the nation's best bigs and one of the nation's best-kept secrets.
Well, I don't think he's a secret anymore, but I do believe that there's a younger generation now that I think that he's one of them, that he knows he's a big fish in a small pond. I know we've talked about it, but I believe that he's the kind of guy, if he keeps playing like he's playing, we're only in the 1.5 years of his career. But let's say that he stays all 4 years. If he continues to play like this and stays healthy, I don't think there's a question that he's putting up Hall of Fame numbers. I mean, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, so people going, oh, my God, Dave, I'm not saying that he's going to be in the Hall of Fame yet. I'm just saying that if people want to know what you can measure it by, who should be in the Hall of Fame, what he's done so far is Hall of Fame worthy, is what I'm saying.
Absolutely. You know, so Jaden Gardner, he certainly just had a remarkable start to his career in that first year and a half, like you said, and he's well on his way if he stays healthy and stays a Pirate, which I certainly think he will. I don't think he's going to be headed anywhere, and like I said, knock on wood, he stays healthy. He's certainly rewriting the record books for certain. And let me clarify what I was saying as far as being a secret. One of the nation's best-kept secrets. And, yes, your analysts and stuff, and most of those guys that follow the game for a living, they certainly know who he is, and fans that follow the game extremely closely. But I'm talking about, you know, fans of, say, a Duke or North Carolina, Kentucky, somebody like that that follows just maybe your household programs and that kind of thing, would be blown away when they see Jaden Gardner and somebody that they're probably not going to be aware of.
And if he had gone, the point I made to everybody, he has talent to play in power leagues, and we are a power league anyway. That's a whole other podcast. What I'm saying is, if you go to Duke, Carolina, he could be sitting on the bench, and he knows that. It's not a, it's not like he has no talent. It's a matter of maybe the lineup that they're using, or who knows what the case. There's so many great players that go to those schools, and I think the one thing we need to get him back on. We will here pretty soon, but Sisse Moore is fantastic, and I think that he said it a couple times on this show. As a matter of fact, he said, "Guys." I love the way he talks. Guys, Duke and Carolina can only get so many guys every year. And he makes a great point that there's so many great fans in Pirate Nation who were so, I guess, down about everything, but especially about the basketball program. We've been bad for so long that they just said, there's no way that this guy is going to come to East Carolina. Well, how's it practice today? And you see a rock of war. You see Coach Chilius. You see... I mean, George Wright Easy. You see all these coaches, and you start to think about back in the day, we might have one or two great coaches. Then you have even Tim Potasnik stayed on. He's a special assistant to Coach Dooley. I mean, the rock star coaching staff, we've got everything. We've just got to now – the players have balled in. I think after that, I think the low point, as I've said several times, the Coppin State, I think they got it. We can't do it our way. We need to do it coaching staff's way. And are you ready, Bubba, to go to our first guest?
Yeah, we had the opportunity, like we mentioned, to catch up with Jim Lighthall, the play-by-play voice of the USF Bulls. He'll be, or he's actually already in Greenville, getting ready to call the action on Tuesday night. And let's go to that conversation with Jim right now.
Well, it is basketball season, and hard to believe that it's been a while since we talked to our next guest, Bubba.
Yeah, Dave, we caught up with this guy last season. I'm very excited to have back on the show USF play-by-play man, Jim Lighthall. Jim, welcome in.
Hey, I appreciate it, guys. Good to be back.
Glad to have you back, Jim. Love this time of year with basketball. Obviously, one of my favorite sports. And can you give Pirate fans, obviously we have a big game on Tuesday night. Can you talk to all of us about how USF has been so far this season?
Yeah, well, 8-7 at the moment. A big win yesterday at home against UConn, 75-60. They've kind of been alternating wins and losses here for a little bit. The season got off to a bit of a rocky start when 3 days before the first game, Alexis Yetna, who was the freshman of the year in the league last year, tore some knee ligaments, non-contact injury in practice. That was a devastating blow, I think, to the team, to the university, to all the fans, and just trying to adjust to life without Alexis Yetna has been extremely difficult. But I think the team is finally starting to settle into their new roles. Head coach Brian Gregory has a great quote when he talks about, you know, playing without Alexis Yetna, and he said the hardest thing to do in coaching is to coach a team that you weren't expecting to coach. So in other words, he was expecting to have everybody back from last year's team with the exception of two guys. And Alexis Yetna was going to be one of them and be a large contributor. Well, now all of a sudden, after going to Canada on a summer tour, playing a couple of preseason games, you're expecting to have guys in certain roles, and now all of a sudden everybody has to shift over a spot, and you have to adjust without a player of Yetna's caliber. So that was a real stunner, but I think they're starting to adjust their roles. They're going small, guys. Their power forward right now is 6'6", 218 pounds. But it's worked out so far, at least.
Jim, in a moment, I want to dive into the personnel more, and I know you have some tremendous guard play, but you talked about the schedule up to this point and how the Bulls have kind of been a win-loss, and lacking some consistency. That's why I know you did pick up a big win in your most recent game on Saturday night against UConn and taking down the Huskies 75-60 there in the Ingling Center. And that was coming off an 82-64 loss out in the conference opener at SMU. So prior to beginning league play, I know you had dropped a couple of heartbreakers to a couple of very strong teams in Utah State and Florida State. So talk a little bit about the non-conference portion of the schedule.
Yeah, last year, let me start by saying last year, they played a very soft non-conference schedule because they were coming off a 10-win season, and they needed wins to build some confidence. So now Brian Gregory has scheduled some difficult teams in the non-conference. First of all, we went down to the Cayman Islands, which is a tough job, but somebody had to do it. So we went down there and played three games, beat Loyola Chicago, lost to a really good New Mexico State team, and then got beat in a tough game against Nebraska. You mentioned the Utah State and Florida State games, both neutral site games, top 25 caliber opponents, obviously. I really thought they had a chance to win both games and probably should have won both games. We were leading Utah State by four with a minute to play and lost that game at the buzzer on kind of a fluke play that got batted around, ended up in the hands of a Utah State kid, and he stuck it back with 0.2 seconds left to beat him. And then the Florida State game led the entire way. And then really, they turned up some pressure at the end, forced some turnovers. The USF did everything right for the first 35 minutes. Their game is to get to the basket, and that's what they did. And then all of a sudden, the last 5 minutes, the officials kind of swallowed their whistles, couldn't get to the line at all after that, and they couldn't score. So they ended up losing that game by six. But when you look at their non-conference, they played a Wofford team that won 30 games last year. New Mexico State won 30 games. Utah State 128 and Florida State 129. So very difficult non-conference schedule there. They beat the teams they probably should have beaten and lost to the teams they probably should have lost to. But again, I think had Yetna been on this team, they might have been around 11-2 coming out of the non-conference schedule, but that's life comes at you fast and they had to adjust. But I think it got them ready for conference play, though. Very difficult non-conference schedule.
Jim, I wanted to ask you, as far as we talked with you last year about how much we think of Coach Gregory being a great coach, disappointing at Georgia Tech as far as the way that went down. It was great for USF, obviously. He had a chance to, I guess, overhaul the team, revamp the team, something similar to what Joe Dooley did at East Carolina last year. I think everybody would say it worked really well down your way in Tampa, don't you think?
No doubt. You know, I've been working on the East Carolina stuff all day today, and I see a lot of similarities. I think I told some folks, maybe I told you guys this last year, that I saw some similarities in East Carolina last year because I thought they were on the same trajectory
right.
that USF was on. But then you roll your roster over. You know, for Brian Gregory, they have a saying there in the office. They say they're looking for OKG, our kind of guys. And they want the kind of guys that are tough, that are winners at the high school level, and then are very good academically. So those are really the three main ingredients that they're looking for. They don't pigeonhole themselves into we're looking for athletic guys or we're looking for shooters or we're looking for bigs or anything like that. If you can play and you fit into those three categories, then you're going to fit in at USF because that's kind of the way Brian Gregory is wired. He's a Chicago guy. He's a tough dude. And, you know, when he put his team together, he knew they were going to take their lumps that first year. But again, he did it with his kind of guys. And there's really only two players left from that group. And that's the two freshmen that year with Justin Brown and David Collins. And now you look at those two guys and they're two of maybe the three leaders on this team.
Jim, talking about some of those key ingredients, you have tremendous guard play. One of those names you just mentioned, David Collins, he scored in double figures all but three games this season, averaging a little over 14.5 points a ball game, a couple steals per game. And then also LaQuincy Rideau, he's a guy that he's a very muscular guard. I remember him from last year's games against the Pirates. And he's a guy that scored 17 points, eight rebounds, and six assists in the win over UConn on Saturday night. And he's averaging a little over 13 points and right at five rebounds per game. And he also has nearly 2.5 steals per game. So talk about those two guys.
Well, first of all, I think it starts at the defensive end for both of them. Rito, defensive player of the year last year in the league, he had 100 steals last season alone. He's off to that kind of start again. He's in the top 10 in the nation in that department. They create offense from their defense, and it usually starts with those two guys because had LaQuincy Rito not set the school record in steals last year, David Collins would have. That's how good the two of them were together. Collins is built like a linebacker. He's 6'3", 218 pounds, rock solid muscle, He likes to lower his head and go to the basket. His shooting has improved this year. And I think when you couple that with Rito, who's another guy like you talked about, very powerfully built at 6'1", 205. Here's the thing about LaQuincy. He threw his name into the ring for the NBA draft last year, which surprised a lot of people. But I think more than anything, he just wanted to see what he needed to do for the next year to see if he could play at the next level. He went on a bad ankle to the combine or to that weekend where they evaluate you. Didn't play all that great, didn't play all that poorly, but he was, again, a little hobbled. And the word that came back to him was, hey, you look a little chubby. He's still, you know, a little doughy at two. At that time, he was about 215 and just still has some baby fat on him. And so the feedback that he got was, you need to improve your body, and then we think the rest will come. Well, he immediately came back and shaved 10 pounds off of himself. Actually shaved 15 pounds off of himself, and then put 5 pounds of muscle right back on. So he looks different than he did last year. But again, both of these guys are total bulldogs. They will stand down to absolutely no one. David Collins got a technical foul yesterday because he tried to walk right through the middle of the UConn huddle. And that was just the way it was because they're not going to back down. So how those two play, that's how this team goes. Bottom line, if one or the other doesn't play well, this team usually loses.
You mentioned that loss of Alexis Yetna. Tell us more about the Bulls front court, especially in Yetna's absence, and who are the key contributors?
Yeah, well, really the main guy is the 7-footer from Atlanta, Michael Durr. The kid's already played in 53 games in his career. He's a sophomore. He's averaging 6 points, about 6.5 rebounds. He's got a skilled offensive game, can score with either hand, can go over either shoulder. I'll tell you what's really plagued him this year is putting the ball in the basket. He's been around the rim all year long, and for whatever reason, it's just shots have rolled off or he's missed little 2- and 3-footers. That's starting to change. Over the last 4 or 5 games, he's shooting around 65% from the floor. So, again, that's starting to come around. And I think the onus of having to get more rebounds with the loss of Alexis Yetna kind of weighed on him early, and he was struggling early in the year. That has really changed. He had a big game against UConn yesterday, was in double digits and had, I believe, 9 rebounds. So he's a force down low. Stan Van Gundy came to a practice at USF and pulled Gregory aside and said, I don't know if you know this, but Michael Durr is a pro. The way his footwork is, the way his hands are, that kid can play at the next level. I think he's a long way away from that, and he's awfully raw, but he's the man in the middle. And then Antun Maricevic, who's 6'10". He's a Croatian junior college kid. He's played over 100 college games, only averages 3 points and 3 rebounds, but the kid sticks his nose in there and does a lot of the dirty work. He's shooting around 60% from the floor. He can step out and shoot, which he did last year quite a bit. He's not doing it as much this year. And then they got a young kid by the name of B.J. Mack, who's 6'8", 260, freshman out of Oak Hill Academy. Came to USF in the summer at over 290 pounds because he hurt his foot at the tail end of his high school career and got way out of shape. So they trimmed 30 pounds off of him in the offseason. He's got a lot of baby fat on him, but there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah, I don't know if the guys have anything else basketball related, but I did want to mention the Jeff Scott hire in football, and I just get your thoughts on that. I was a little bit surprised to see you guys go ahead and pull the trigger on Charlie Strong, and but I like the Jeff Scott hire. He's done an amazing job running the offense at Clemson, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on the hire and how things are going so far.
Yeah, I tell you what, guys, I work on the Football Network as well, and I could have really argued both sides. Charlie stays and Charlie goes. The bottom line was he was trending in the wrong direction. You know, going from a 10-win team to a 7-win team, which doesn't sound bad until you realize that they lost their last 6, and then a 4-win team after that. So he was headed in the wrong direction, makes a pretty good bit of money. No knock on Charlie because I got to know him a little bit, but he just wasn't the guy that was going out and shaking hands and kissing babies, which you kind of have to do at the University of South Florida with your football program to put people in the seats. So, and Brian Gregory is a really good friend of Charlie Strong. They got hired at almost the same time. They lived in the president's house together at the same time for a month while their families finished school before they moved to Tampa. And he got to be very close friends with Charlie. And Gregory said that Charlie Strong was absolutely stunned that he got fired, which surprises me because at the tail end of the year at those news conferences, people were asking him, do you think you deserve to keep your job? Which, you know, usually they're not asking that unless you're on the hot seat. So, so Charlie goes, and Jeff Scott was the number one guy all along. Michael Kelly, the vice president of athletics at USF, has a tremendous pedigree for dealing with college football hierarchy, having worked with the college football playoff for a long time, and he has ACC ties. He wanted Jeff Scott from day one. Jeff Scott was very interested in the job when Charlie Strong got hired, but they just didn't think he was quite ready yet, a little bit too young. I love the hire. My thing was, give me a guy between age 35 and 40 with an offensive mind and is willing to go out and meet the public. He checks all those boxes. Dynamic personality for a guy that we got to wait a little bit till we finally get him full time, but he won the news conference, that's for sure.
All right. Jim, I had a question. Since we're talking football, I know you're just basketball, but I wanted to ask you, as far as the Bulls are concerned, Pirates on the gridiron, five straight losing seasons, praying that we can get back to a bowl. Obviously, we'd love to be in your neck of the woods. You guys have one of the, in my opinion, down in Tampa, one of the best names for a bowl, the Bad Boy Moore's Gasparilla Bowl. And I don't know if it's there. Or do you have a pick on where you would, if you could go to any bowl, like in Florida, where would you go?
Give me the Orange Bowl, I guess. Yeah, just because of the prestige, I'll take the Orange Bowl over any of them. From my understanding, you know, the bowl in Boca Raton was actually put together pretty well. Our engineer went down there and worked that game this year, and he said, you know, it's not a big stadium, it's not a big town, but he said they really put together a nice event. It's a nice part of the state. I don't know if USF really wants to go there. The Gasparilla Bowl isn't a great destination bowl for a lot of teams. I think if you're up north, you don't mind coming to Tampa, but the Bulls played in it last year, and God love them. Those poor guys have had two miserable weather games the last 2 years that they put it on. Scott Glazer, the executive director, is a very good friend of mine, having come from USF. But they've had just miserable weather the last 2 years. So I guess I'll take the Orange Bowl if I had to pick one of them in the state.
Jim, before we get back to basketball, because I did have another question or two there, on the football side of things, what can you tell us about the staff that Jeff Scott's put together thus far?
Yeah, he's kind of putting it together here and there. I know he's pulled a couple of guys. Don't ask me names off the top of my head. I have them saved on my phone when they come in on the press releases, so I'll get to know those guys once the basketball season ends a little bit better. But he's pulled two guys away from FAU, including Lane Kiffin's offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator. So the other names I don't know very well at all, and he still has yet to fill out his staff. I know he just got the guy from Georgia yesterday or the day before. So I'm sure he's going to pull, the rumor is he's going to pull probably three guys away from the Clemson staff if he can. But again, he can't really do anything with those guys until their season's over.
Jim, I had a question for you. Putting you on your spot, that's my job tonight. Who do you like in the national championship game between Clemson and LSU?
Well, yeah, he's got to be cheering for.
I know he's cheering for. I know that. I understand that.
Yeah,
so you're going to be going
listen,
Clemson,
part of me was kind of hoping Clemson got beat in the semifinals so we could get Jeff Scott full time. But
right.
But I do know how valuable that is to him and to those assistants that will likely come with him to win a national championship.
He creates more bugs, too.
Yeah, exactly. I just find it very difficult to pick against LSU. They just look amazing. Joe Burrow had an amazing season, one of the best in the history of college football. I don't see who can stop them. Now, I've said that before.
Tweet this to Jeff Scott, guys. Make sure we tag Jeff in this.
Hey, he's probably saying the same thing. Luckily, he doesn't have to try and stop that LSU offense. They can score on LSU. There's no doubt they can score on them. But it's going to be one of those games where whoever can outscore the other team. I have a feeling it's going to be a 40-35 type game.
I agree with you. I've given you a tough time.
I understand.
I don't see how anybody can stop LSU. And then when you look at Clemson, you kind of, except for Ohio State, they really haven't played anybody this year. The ACC was terrible.
Yeah, and they were, you know, I say this as we were going into the playoffs. I said, what's an absolute shame is in the days of the BCS, either Clemson or Ohio State was going to get left out of that game. So with three undefeated teams, and again, you could I think LSU was certainly the best, but you could have argued Ohio State or Clemson, probably Ohio State based on who they had beaten. But Clemson would have been left out. So, you know, it's only four teams, and I wish it was more. I wish there were more teams in it, but that's the way it is now, and at least Clemson had a shot. And listen, we've said this for many, 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 many times. I could sit here and recite 20 teams that were told they had absolutely no way to win, and then they go out and win. So, in all sports, so it can certainly happen. Yep.
Jim, you're not about it. Getting back to the hardwood, I wanted to ask you about or just make a couple points, some numbers that jumped out at me. First of all, I think this is a game between the Pirates and the Bulls on Tuesday night. They'll probably be played in the mid to upper 60s, just looking at things. And as you look at USF and East Carolina and both of those teams and get to the free throw line an awful lot, significantly more than their opponents, the Bulls shoot a little just barely over 60%. Meanwhile, the Pirates are over 73%. But then from the three-point line, although neither of these teams shoot it very well from the floor, the Bulls are 34.5% from three, while East Carolina is just 28.5%. And so those are some of the things that I think are worth keeping an eye on come Tuesday night.
Yeah, no doubt. I'll start with the free throw shooting. You know, the Bulls lit it up against UConn yesterday. And by that, you know, for them to go, I think they were like 21 of 29 last night, which is amazing for them, because they just don't do that very often. Going into the game yesterday, they were in the bottom 10 in the country in free throw shooting at under 59%. So you never know what you're going to get there. A problem is LaQuincy Rito. He's the starting point guard, and he raised his free throw shooting average to 44% yesterday. So it's a very, very thin line of giving him the ball late in the game because teams put him at the line. And last year, free throw shooting cost this team three games without debate. They lost three games because of free throw shooting, and they lost one earlier this year because of free throw shooting. So if it comes down to that, I obviously advantage East Carolina. Then you start talking about the three-point shooting, and you're right. I don't think either one of these teams can set the world on fire with three-point shooting. USF went 10 of 20 the other night at SMU, which they don't ever really do. This is a team that shoots, you know, if they can shoot 40% for the game, then that's a tremendous three-point shooting day. I don't see a whole lot of shooting out of East Carolina. That's why you're right. This game's going to be played in the 60s. This game's going to be decided by turnovers and rebounding, in my opinion. I don't know who the Bulls are going to put on Gardner. Last year, you had Alexis Yetten at 230 pounds that could probably guard him. This year, they don't have anybody like that. If they put Michael Durr on him to use his size, he's going to go right around Michael Durr. If they put Rayshon Williams on him at 6'6", 222, he's going to push him into the second row of the seats at Minji's Coliseum. So I don't know who they're going to put on him, but whoever turns the ball over less and whoever wins the rebounding battle, in particular the offensive rebounding battle, because I think that's key for both teams, is going to win the game on Tuesday.
And, Jim, by the way, just a little sidebar for you for the broadcast. If the Pirates score 75 points or more, you get a free Taco Bell. So that'll be something.
Okay.
If you notice a score and you see that, I don't know why they do that. But I was just talking about there's so many times where the Pirates do score 75 and I never go by Taco Bell. So.
Well, we're staying in Greenville Tuesday night. We're going to the next morning to travel, so I will make sure to see a Taco Bell after the Bulls win, like, you know, 78 to 77.
That would be
like
great,
that.
Yeah.
Jim, we really appreciate your time, appreciate you catching up, and we'll certainly look forward to catching up with you later in the year.
Hey, anytime, guys. Happy to do it. Love talking USF basketball.
Well, hopefully Jim can actually get a taco. What do you think? I was trying I caught him off guard, but I just think that's a funny promotion. And I think you were talking about that just now about the I think you were just talking about the score or whatever, and that's why it dawned on me. I just think that's funny. If you score 75 points or more, the Pirates do rather, then you get a free taco from Taco Bell. I'm just curious how many tacos they have to give away. How many people care? And then those of us that do care and love Taco Bell, I'm on a diet, so I can't eat the tacos right now. And even when I am not on a diet, I forget to go. So how many tacos do they really have to put out? And if you do go to Taco Bell, then you're actually going to be buying stuff. It's a great loss leader, right?
Yeah, no doubt. And that's what I certainly – like you said, I try not to eat too much of it, but I do like Taco Bell and
Bojangles. And, like me.
But yeah, I mean that's a good promotion that the athletics department has had in place for a few years now.
no doubt. And they do for KFC, I think, half price buckets for football. So when you're going and tacos as well. But anyway, good luck to the Pirates. I know they're going to do well. Bubba, I tell you what, very excited about our next guest. One of the things that we pride ourselves on, and it's because of co-host Bubba Rosenbaum, we'll give him a lot of credit. He and I and Kyle work together as much as we can. Three different places, three different lives, but we work really hard to try to, behind the scenes, get guests that you want and people that we think that you will care about. And one of the things that we get a lot of compliments on, Bubba, is the guests that we have, and particularly with former players. So a lot of them that we've been surprised, Bubba, as you know, since we started the podcast, they don't think they matter, and we want to showcase them because they do matter. If you put on that purple gold uniform, whatever sport you play, you're very special to us. And Bubba, I know that right now I'm excited about our next guest.
Yeah, we always enjoy catching up with those former Pirate players, like you said, no matter what sport it's from, whether it's the Big Three or some of our Olympic sports. But this guy, like I said, he's an Eastern North Carolina guy. Is back in the eastern part of the state now, living right there. I think it's in Farmville. But Robin House, he played at Greenville Christian Academy, had a very nice career there, was getting some recruitment. But that's what he wanted to stay home and play for the Pirates. He walked on under Mike Steele, earned a scholarship. I think it was maybe his second season he earned that scholarship, maybe even the first. But you'll hear that in this interview. And let's go to that interview with Pirate basketball letter winner from 88 to 92, Robin House.
Being basketball season, Bubba, I know that we always try to get guys from the past with Pirate basketball, and we've got a very special guest with us right now.
Yeah, very excited to catch up with the guy making his debut on the show, Pirate basketball letter winner from 1988 to 92, Robin House. Robin, welcome in.
Thanks, guys. Glad to be here.
Wanted to have you on, Robin. Obviously, basketball season. Coach Joe Dewey will be talking about him in just a little while. Can you, I guess the best way to start out the interview is, can you talk about your decision to become a Pirate back in 1988?
Yeah. I was doing pretty good at a local school here at Greenville Christian Academy, and you know, I wasn't heavily recruited, but you know, I had a couple of teams checking me out, and I had just been, you know, Eastern North Carolina, growing up here, been around it all my life, and you know, I got to meet Coach Steele in my senior season in high school, and you know, he just kind of told me, you know, what he was going to have available and what my situation would be. And I knew going in there I would have to come in as a walk-on, and if I was good enough, I would be able to earn a scholarship. And after my first semester at ECU, Coach awarded me with a scholarship, and I ended up 4 years there. And it, you know, just turned out a good situation for me.
Now, Robin, during your time at East Carolina, like I said, 88 to 92, you had the opportunity to play with some of the best players in our program's history, the likes of Blue Edwards, Lester Lyons, Gus Hill, or some that come to mind. So talk about your memories and playing with those guys. And before you dive into some of your memories, I wanted to see Pirate fans that have been around for all these years, going back 30 years, may remember during Blue's days, the story of him shattering a backboard. I don't know if it was in a purple gold game or just an inter-squad scrimmage. Do you recall that? And were you on hand when that happened?
Oh yeah, I was there. Probably playing with Blue, you know, was exciting for me. That was my freshman year, and he was the man. You know, he basically carried the team. I remember going into Duke with Blue, and you know, the first half, we were right there. You know, just their size and stuff there. They took over in the second half. But, you know, he single-handedly kept us in those games. The shattering the backboard was a purple gold game, and I still have a piece of glass from that in my little treasure case. I went and picked the piece up, and I still have it to this day. And that was an amazing feat. I mean, he just shattered that thing, and that kind of ended the game. So that was good. I have a funny story with Blue. It was my freshman year, and you know, we were in practice, and Blue picked off a pass I had made, and he was coming down in the game, and I had the nerve. I was going to try to contest him dunking on me, and Coach Steele just, you know, Coach Steele about went ballistic, and I probably almost lost my scholarship, man. He basically said, hey, you know, that's our guy. If you hurt him in practice, you're not going to be well thought of here, you know. So I learned a real quick lesson there. But Blue's a great guy. He was fun to play with. And, you know, he's doing well over at Green Central now.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That was awesome to see Blue get the opportunity to go back home and guide his alma mater. He said that it's something that he never thought that he would end up doing. It certainly was not something that he set out to do, but it's funny how life will lead you, and God's plan is sometimes not what we have planned.
That's right.
But talking about your days with the Pirates, are there any games or certain memories in addition to that with Blue that we just talked about that come to mind?
With Blue, well, you know, he was only here that year, so you know, I got to know him, you know, pretty well. And being that he was from Greene County, you know, close to where I was from, we had a few things in common. But, you know, I became a big Utah Jazz fan when he got drafted, and kind of watched him and just kind of watched his career and stuff. And then, I don't know, maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, he was in Charlotte for a little bit. And I ran into him there, and we just touched base again. And he's been, he's been a great teammate to me, as well as all the teammates. So I know you talked about Gus and Lester. I mean, Lester, I had to battle. Me and him and I were, you know, paired up every day in practice. It was me on him or him on me. I mean, it was, you know, he's obviously a Hall of Famer, so that was my practice every day. I had to go against that guy. And I mean, he's a tough player as well. So, and, you know, just a lot of good memories.
I'll say, looking at your career, I know your junior season, at least statistically, on that seemed to be your best season. You averaged close to 7 points a ball game, I believe. So do you have any recollection or like what are your fond memories of that season?
Probably of the junior season was my performance at Duke. I think I had my career high there. I had 19 in camera, and you know, that was just a fun place to play. Not many people, you know, get to play or win there. But we certainly we played 4 straight years there when I played, and having my career high there was, you know, it was that kind of sometimes means a lot, you know, because they pride themselves in defense and all that, and to go in there and drop 19 was, you know, if we all could have done 19, we might have been around in that game, but that was pretty fun, and there were some other games. Coach Steele reminds me all the time. We had a game up at ODU that went, you know, down through the wire, and I hit a big shot at the end of the game there. And to Coach Deal, that was probably his favorite memory of me that year. So there was a couple good games, I thought.
Now, Robin, you mentioned that name, Mike Steele. Obviously, you played the majority of your career for him before finishing up things with Eddie Payne, and both as a player and as a student assistant coach. But tell us about Coach Steele and what he was like. You've discussed him a little, but I know Coach Steele, he's someone, unfortunately, it didn't work out with him at East Carolina as a head coach, but he's stayed in the community and he's been involved with East Carolina Athletics. You hear him on Pirate Radio periodically, and he's an excellent interview and very knowledgeable about sports. So, tell us a little bit about your relationship with Coach Steele and what he was like as a coach.
You know, he was very straightforward as a coach, and you know, he had a good mind for basketball, and obviously he was a good player. And I believe, you know, one of the teams is in the Hall of Fame now. And you know, he was good also, you know, in teaching you life skills as well. You know, there were some things that just didn't work out there, and but overall, you know, as a coach, you know, he had a lot of good basketball philosophy and taught it well. you know, just, you know, sometimes we didn't do, you know, the best things we could have. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, that just kind of worked out the way it did. But I have a good relationship with him now. I mean, he's always asking about me and my health, and when we stay in touch, we played in some golf tournaments together, and we go to quite a few games. And like you say, he's done a lot for the community. He's always been a prominent person in the Greenville community and with East Carolina. And when his son Drew, I mean, Drew's a legend at East Carolina. And I've known Drew. I mean, Drew was just a tiny little kid when we got there, and just he's done a lot. He's done a lot for everybody.
You know, yeah, Robin, that's one.
I'm sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking it's funny. If we can get Coach Steele on, we have a special segment for him, Robin. It's called Keeping It Real with Coach Mike Steele.
Okay.
Because he literally, I like him a lot because don't ask him. His opinion on something, because he definitely is not going to hold back, right? That's what I love about him.
That's true. And he's got a lot. I mean, you know, he's very descriptive in his opinions, and you know, he's got a good point of view on a lot of things. A lot of times when I was sitting in the stands with him on a couple of games this year, you know, he would just start talking about, you know, look at the zone and what it's doing, or you know, hey we got to stop this and that. You know, he's got good opinions on everything.
So, in other words, guys, he's kind of like Rick Smith.
yeah, exactly. He's the basketball version of Rick Smith. And the great thing I like about him is you were talking about the community stuff. Also, the fact that he's really you're talking about the support. I've been really thrilled with him and impressed with him after the fact, after coaching, how he's really – stayed really close to the program with East Carolina, and it's not so often that you see that happen when a coach stays here and stays a part of the community like after he left the program.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, Robin, after your junior season, you had Coach Payne coming in. So talk a little bit about that transition. I know your senior year, as far as wins and losses, they didn't go how you would have liked. But then after you finished up your playing days, you were able to stay on Coach Payne's staff, who obviously also one of his assistants was current head coach Joe Dooley. Talk about Coach Payne, but then also Coach Joe Dooley, and give us a glimpse of what Coach Dooley was like in his early years as a coach.
Okay. I think – the transition, anytime a team goes through that, there's some getting used to what the coach expects. And, you know, when it's your senior year, you know, you got that one shot to try to do, you know, everything he's asking you to do. And, you know, you're just kind of feeling it out a little bit. So, but it was pretty smooth, I thought. And, you know, it just took some time to adjust to Coach Payne, and then when I came back the fifth year to finish my education and whatnot, you could see that, you know, the team was getting more comfortable with his basketball schemes and what he was asking them to do, which led to much success. And you know, I felt good when I first met Coach Dooley. I mean, Coach Dooley, I thought I was, you know, I was pretty decent shooter and things like that. But then when he got there, I realized I had a long way to go. He really pushed the mechanics of offense, from shooting to movement to dribbling, and just getting more skill at position. I thought, you know, when Coach Dooley was working with Coach Payne, that, you know, he was a great asset to increasing players' individuality as far as performance on the offense at that time. And that was many years ago, you know, before he went on to Kansas and Florida and now back to East Carolina.
It's funny you bring that up as far as the individual skill development, because we've had several players from that era on, the likes of Tony Parham, also Othello Meadows, to name a couple. And I think it was Othello Meadows, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, that was talking about that, the improvement he made from his freshman year to his sophomore year, how many shots he got up in the off season, and Coach Dooley fine-tuning that jumper.
That is correct. Yeah, it was him.
Yeah, Coach, I mean, you know, and nothing against the other coaches that worked with me in my first 3 years, but it just seemed that he just had a way of trying to get you to be super skilled in your offensive movements. And I think if I had that maybe as a freshman, I could have kept and got even better, you know, than I was. And it was just, honestly, it was like a lot to take on because he brought so much information to change your game and improve your game.
And Robin, sorry, Dave, just very quickly, I had a follow-up since Robin brought up the progression of that 92-93 team and how you could kind of see good things in store. And it sounds crazy to think that you actually had a decent shot going to the tournament as a 7 seed and 10-17 overall record at that point, I guess it was, 10-17, yeah. 10-16, whatever it was. And then you go up to Richmond and win 3 ball games. But like you said, even though we had losses, I knew we went down to Alabama, nearly knocked them off, lost by 5, I think it was, and then had some other near misses against quality opponents.
That's right. And, you know, even like right now, and I'm going to kind of compare that to the team, you know, Coach Dooley's got such new players. But you can kind of see, like, if you kind of know what you're watching for, you can really see that the corners kind of turned, and when it does, and you know, you got good coaching and some players that can play, good things are going to happen. And that happened that year, and you know, I'm kind of looking forward to the same thing. And it's actually, it seems like it happened a little quicker this year to me for what the players are doing than I thought. And but you get that kind of result.
Robin, that was a nice segue there for me. That was exactly what I was going to ask you, is the very fact of with this team currently with Coach Dooley, you know Coach Dooley, and you know the toughness, being tenacious, that's one of the words that comes to mind for Coach Dooley. But I was going to ask you that very question about this team. Being a former player, I know how much pride you have in the program. I know we haven't had, unfortunately, the success that we would like to. How close do you think we are to turning the corner and being at the next level, being where I told people that I wanted to be where over the next handful of years, maybe a decade, where we can be disappointed because we didn't make the tournament?
Well, that's what I think as well. And I agree with that. I think we're closer than I thought we would be this year with all the new players. And you know, where we were in the first couple games that I saw, I just thought, man, you know, we do got a long way to go. And, you know, they got on that 4-win streak and then went to Wichita and played a really good, solid basketball game. And you could just see players were learning what they could do for the team. And I saw a lot of camaraderie on the team. I saw the guys hugging in the huddle. And I saw guys pulling for guys that were making shots, and JJ hit a couple shots in a row, and you know, and Garner, the way he plays, just inspirational to all his teammates. And you know, they've got some good looking basketball players, and they can size up with people. And I want them to win quicker, probably, you know, than most people, but I know it's going to take a little time. But if they keep playing and progressing like they are, I mean, I think with Coach Dooley, with the experience that he gained at different universities and bringing that back to East Carolina, I really think, and what I've seen from him, they're going to get where we need them to be.
That's one of those things, once we get there, and hopefully even before then, even before the wins start coming as much as we would like, hopefully the crowds will start growing in size in Minji's, and when they do, honestly, we've talked about this numerous times on this podcast, Robin, just even when there's 2,500, 3,000 people in Minji's, how loud it can get. So you get 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people in there on a consistent basis, like there sometimes was, I mean, back in your day when we were playing UNC Wilmington or JMU, Richmond, some of the better teams in the league in the CAA, the old Minji's with the old wooden bleachers, it would get rocking.
Oh yeah, I remember when I was on a recruit visit to East Carolina, and David Robinson, you know, Navy was playing here, and I also got to go to Clemson on a recruiting trip, and I mean Clemson's a whole different place, but I mean I'd say the same thing about Minji's that night. David Robinson was in there. That place was just off the charts. That's two of the places I've been where they were off the charts. And when it is, you know, like the game coming up Tuesday, the fans, and Coach Dooley said this in one of the Dooley Digests, I believe, the fans can change the game. And if that place gets going, you know, it's a several-point advantage.
You know, Robin, we were actually, Bubba and I were acting crazy, including his dad. We were on the bleachers there. About mid-court, as a matter of fact, right behind our friend Morgan Ehlers, PA uh-huh. announcer. And it was funny because Alan Thomas, there's a whole bunch of us there, alums and fans that were, the students weren't there, but we were sitting right there at mid-court, and it was so loud, and it was still only, what, Bubba, three? I think they announced 3,000. It wasn't anywhere, I mean, it wasn't anywhere.
Yeah, they announced it. They announced that Charlotte attendance right around 3,600, but there weren't that many people there, but I don't know if you were in attendance for that one, Robin. If not, I know you were watching. But so that game when we made that run in the last 8 to 10 minutes, Minji's got pretty loud at times.
Oh yeah, no, my health was not as well as it could have been, so I have missed the last two home games, the last two, because I have a little health issues that sometimes keep me away. And but I did watch it, and it was a great game. But I know how it can be. I mean, I know my senior night was crazy in that place, and it's amazing.
Yeah, you talk about how the atmosphere can be. NC State made the one trip here in 07, and that's probably the loudest I've ever seen Minji's. And I think the crowd at least had 50% to do with that win that night, guys. I'm telling you, that's the wildest Minji's has ever been. I don't know if any of y'all were there.
Yeah, I was there, and like you said, Kyle, it was insane for sure. Of course, Coach Mack was guiding the program at that point, and that NC State team, they were probably right around 500. They didn't end up having a very good season, but they did. I think it was J.J. Hickson, maybe a one and done on that team, and they also had Gavin Grant, who was a solid player, Caleb Costner, and some others. I think they had and Dennis Horner, who went on to play in the NBA, and they had a lot of talent on that club, but Sam Hennett lit it up. I think he had about 30 points, I just remember loving to see the faces on some of the Wolfpack fans in absolute disbelief that they were losing to East Carolina in basketball.
Yeah, I was going to say Sidney Lowe. I remember at that game, he had that trademark where he was – do you guys remember that red jacket he was wearing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They had shirts, it seemed like, that said Fear the Blazer.
You're right. I remember that now, actually.
And Kyle, you were talking about crowds. I'll tell you what, that Marquette win that when we beat Marquette against Dwayne – oh my God,
Dwayne Wade.
God, I couldn't think of his name there for a second. And then, obviously, I would think probably the loudest has been in recent times would probably have to be what do you guys think? The 2013 run we had in the CIT. I think it's probably the loudest.
Yeah, in recent history, yeah. If you want to consider that recent, that's been 6 years now, almost seven. Man, we're in 2020 now.
I know, it's hard to believe.
Yeah, Lord Almighty. yeah, if you want to consider that recent. That'd be it. Yeah, that was a lot of fun, that CIT run.
Yeah, the CIT run, and then since then, under the last few years, prior to Dooley with Coach Lebo, I know we had a win over Memphis a time or two. We also had a win over Cincinnati So there were some flashes of what it can be when it's a good ball game and that kind of thing. I don't know if you guys recall this. It was the same year that when we did beat Memphis. It was one of those years we went to the CIT but did not win it. And we also knocked off UTEP. And with UTEP, and remember their coach got tossed. It was It was Tim Floyd. So Tim Floyd had got tossed, and then the assistant coach, he got tossed as well.
Didn't Akeem Richmond have a big shot in that UTEP game at some point?
I don't recall for sure. I'm sure he probably did, but UTEP was very good, and that was a heck of a win. And to beat them and Memphis in a matter of a couple weeks or something, you knew things were heading in the right direction. But I just remember the Menjis Maniacs going absolutely crazy, and then we had the guy who had the Joe Dirt looking hair. he referred to himself as Seabass.
Yep.
And I remember when that assistant coach got tossed and he was walking out of the arena with his arms raised in the air. And then of course, prior to that, when Tim Floyd got tossed, the Greenville PD got involved and escorted him out of the arena. And Tim Floyd didn't like that too much. He was looking at the cop asking him why he's grabbing his arm.
Yeah, that was there's been a lot of great. I tell you what,
Robin, do you have any memories like that where things got out of hand either on the road or in Greenville where coaches got ejected or some players had to get ejected, anything just crazy like that?
No, I don't think too much of that, and if I did, I'd have to plead the fifth, I guess.
Well, I tell you what, last year I was getting ready to say, it's funny you mentioned that, Kyle, that Houston game was Calvin Sampson's team was way out of control. The referees, I know the guys, when they do well, I will be the first guy to admit they do well. But they really, really did a poor job officiating that night, letting the game get way out of hand. I still don't understand what transpired to have Coach Dooley. He said the first technical, I'll never forget that. He said the first technical, you know what, I deserved it. Everything I said, I deserve the technical. He said, the second one, I didn't even do anything. The guy tosses me for no reason. He said, as soon as I went to my office, he called the head of the officials and was immediately complaining. But I'll never forget that as long as I live. It was that was pandemonium. And I don't think I've ever been that upset at a basketball game, even though we've lost our share at Menjis and Williams Arena. I don't think I've ever been upset because of what was going on or not going on, or it was just that was a really surreal moment, probably the most surreal that I can ever remember of all the basketball games I've been going to over the last three decades.
Guys, I have a couple of stories, and Kyle, you were asking Robin if he had anything from that era, and these were either from Robin's years or shortly thereafter. Of course, Robin will remember when Lefty at JMU and had Dukes rolling. So they had come into Menjis, and one of the giveaways that night, they were passing out Lefty Drizzell masks. So you had all the students. You had several hundred or even a thousand plus Lefty Drizzell masks, and that was pretty funny. And so after the game, an ECU female student went up to Lefty on his way to the press room for his post-game press conference and said, "Now, Lefty, will you sign your face for me?" And he said, "I won't sign mine, but I'll sign yours."
Lefty had a thing where, Lefty went to Duke, and he always said that he didn't know how to sign his name, and he would always give his autograph as just an X. I'll never forget that. He was actually a lot of fun. My friend Jason and I, it was probably the 94 season. It was after the tournament run. We went to sit behind the bench there, behind Lefty, and we were giving him all kinds of grief. And he was one of the thing I love about Lefty is not only is a great personality, but, he had fun with it. He didn't, take it out on us. And we were college kids, 20 years old, not probably the nicest guys in the world.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Lefty Drizzell was one of college basketball's great personalities and characters for sure. And the other story was, you guys remember the war at the shore, East Carolina, UNC, Wilmington, so many hard-fought battles. And this was in Minji's there, like I said, early 90s. And their coach was Robert McPherson. And so I was probably 10 years old or so. And I had thought his name was Richard McPherson because I thought that was the reason that the students were chanting "Sit down, Dick," and they were, of course, chanting it for other reasons. So, so Brian Withers, who played for UNC Wilmington at the time, turned around to me, and I don't know why he asked me, a 10-year-old, but and he said, "Who's Dick?" And I said, "Your coach is." So he probably thought, man, he said, even the 10-year-olds are talking smack up here. They're starting them early in Greenville.
Gary must have been proud, Bubba.
Yeah, I told him after the game or whenever I went back to my seat after that, and he was laughing his butt off.
Robin, what are you doing now? Can you tell fans in Pirate Nation what you're up to?
Well, I medically retired about 4 or 5 years ago. I caught a chronic illness disease called sarcoidosis, and it affected me quite a bit in many different ways. So I've just been working on getting healthier and getting back involved. This is the first year I've been really healthy enough to kind of get more social. That's what I'm kind of doing now. I did work for two companies quite a while. I went to work for Fans Club and an architectural firm when I got out of school. But I ended up working for Fans Club for about 20-some years. And then when I got this sickness, I'm just medically retired and kind of moved home. And I've been working on my health here for the last couple of years.
Yeah. Do you know of any research or charities that are working on a cure for sarcoidosis that people may want to know about to try to donate to?
Well, I know a little bit about the Bernie Mac Foundation. If you know Bernie Mac, the comedian, he had it for several years, and he ended up getting pneumonia, and that's a terrible thing to get if you have pulmonary sarcoidosis. So the Bernie Mac Foundation is kind of big. And if you remember Reggie White, defensive player in the NFL,
yeah,
he died very quickly from sarcoidosis. I've seen a couple things with Bill Russell with the Boston Celtics. Him and his daughter both have sarcoidosis, and they have a foundation as well. But the crazy thing about sarcoidosis, it affects people so much differently, and it's hard to diagnose, and if you get it, it's tough to treat because it mimics so many different diseases. So the probably the one most people know is the Bernie Mac Foundation, and I kind of follow it quite a bit, but I also do look at Bill Russell's organization as well, and I think it's just fightsarcoidosis.org. I think the name of it, I can't really think of it right off the top of my head. But the Bernie Mac Foundation does quite a bit. And then the Cleveland Clinic, obviously in Cleveland, is the prominent place that people can get pretty good treatment if you have it.
All right.
Thanks for asking about that.
Yeah, no problem. Definitely wanted to get the word out. And funny you mentioned that about Bernie Mac. I was watching Bad Santa the other day and seen him with John Ritter, and I thought, man, both those guys are gone. But
right.
Bernie Mac was a funny guy.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Robin, thank you so much for being with us. And are there any places people could follow you on social media? You're a social media guy?
I mainly do Facebook, but I'm on Instagram a little bit, Twitter, very, very little, but mostly Facebook is what I'm on. And, I'll post some things about the Pirates. I think we have a better shot this Tuesday against USF than they're giving us. So I'll probably put my opinions on there about what I think we need to do. And that's about it.
All right, Rob, appreciate it very much. Thank you so much for your time. It's great. That's one of the I say this a lot on our podcast, on the show, that you know a lot of names and faces, but it's nice to be able to learn more about the athletes from that's more my era, and certainly even way before my era, we've had guys all the way back to, I know, for football, Stasevich. So thank you so much for all you did for Pirate Nation and what you're doing now, and hopefully you won't be a stranger. Love to have you back on again real soon.
Oh, great. I enjoyed it, and, you know, first time's tough, I guess, but maybe I'll get better at it. You guys are great, and enjoyed being on.
Thanks, Robin.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Yeah, appreciate it, Robin. Yeah, we'll have you back on for overtime.
All right. Thanks, man.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Robin. Hey, Coach Steele, where are you? We'd love to have you on. Hopefully we can get him on very soon. I love Mike Steele. I'm really a lot of people think I'm not sincere when I say that, but about different people. But he's one of my favorite people, and I think he's done a nice job over the years and still supporting the program. Like I was saying in the interview with Robin, it's amazing that Mike Steele is still here in Greenville, North Carolina. He still is passionate about Pirate basketball, and it shows that it wasn't just a job for him, you know. It wasn't like a stepping stone. He is, as Scotty Montgomery would say, the real deal to me, and of course, Drew Steele, he's a legend in Greenville. But Robin, thank you so much, and hopefully he'll come back on with us overtime, and we'll definitely keep him in the Rolodex, definitely have him back on. Bubba, I tell you what, we're very fortunate and blessed, I know, for Pirate Nation, where things are calming down as much as possible. And I know that we've had our share of searching for an athletic director, searching for coaches. Are you ready now for our next guest?
Yeah, and like you say, in this time of the year, it's crazy. It's been bumped up a little bit, obviously. You used to think of early February as,
right,
as the signing day or the start of the signing period. People think of it a lot of times. You hear signing day, but it's really just the start of the period. But anyway, with that early signing period now being in mid-December, a lot of those coaching changes take place before the season's over, and you have hirings there early to mid-December, so staffs can do what they need to do to preserve a class. Mississippi State made the decision after its bowl game to part ways with Joe Moorhead, and we had the opportunity to catch up with Steve Robertson from Gene's Page, Mississippi State 24/7 site. He is their co-publisher, and let's go to that conversation with Steve right now.
Well, last time we had our next guest was when back in the days of baseball, early on in the season, the Pirates doing the Magnolia State road trip. And now, Bubba, we're not talking baseball. We might talk a little baseball, but we're primarily talking about football for our next guest, right?
Yeah, no doubt about it. A lot of the coaching changes, head coaching changes, that is, and so typically take place prior to the early signing period in mid-December now. But this is one that took place just a few days ago down at Mississippi State, and Bulldogs parting ways with Joe Moorhead. And now to discuss that, welcome back into the show from Gene's Page. He's their co-publisher, Steve Robertson. Steve, appreciate you coming on.
Happy to be back, guys. And, yeah, what a great baseball season we both had. And thank you guys for having me back on the show. I always enjoyed the visit.
No problem. Just getting right into it. Just broad spectrum question, what happened? I mean, I was shocked when I heard the news that Joe Moorhead had been let go after two seasons, wins eight games his first year, six games his second year. What's going on in Starkville?
Well, I would say it's not one issue. You know, I don't think it's just one scandal or one incident. You know, sometimes you have that when you have, you know, kind of a termination that it appears to come out of left field. But to be fair with you, this is one of those things that's kind of been in the works for a while. And one of the things that I've learned in recent days is that athletic director John Cohen really began to kind of kick the tires a little bit and have some third parties do some reaching out to kind of see, you know, what interest would there be in the Mississippi State job should the Bulldogs like to make a change. And that actually in October, that was a possibility. You know, that was around the time, too, that, you know, Joe Moorhead was mentioned as a potential candidate at Rutgers. And so we kind of looked at that and said, well, you know, maybe that's what that's about, is that John's just been doing his due diligence and being a good athletic director to ensure he doesn't get caught, blindsided by something. And there was some talk among agency circles that, you know what, hey, there is some interest in this job. Should Mississippi State make a change? And then around the Egg Bowl, it kind of bubbled up because State needed to beat Ole Miss to earn bowl eligibility. And, of course, people say, well, it shouldn't boil down to one game. Well, it didn't boil down to one game. It boiled down to bowl eligibility. They get bowl eligible, and then over the course of the last 30 days, there's just been some off-campus, off-the-field incidents. You know, probably the most visible one was Willie Gay and Garrett Schrader coming to blows in a post-practice incident that left Garrett Schrader sidelined for the Music City Bowl. And then you go out and lose that ball game with some pretty, you know, sketchy quarterback play with Tommy Stevens. And I think in the end, when you look at the full scope of things and what's happened over the course of this last season, Mississippi State really wasn't left with much of an alternative.
Now, I got it. Without knowing your program, you know, in and out, obviously, your AD, was he the man that hired Joe Moorhead, or is he your recent hire? He was.
He hired him. So this is his hire, and he has to wear this. You know, and fortunately for John Cohen, you know, last year for the school year, the 2018-19 school year, Mississippi State had a school record 13 athletic programs reach the postseason, and will probably get pretty close to duplicating that feat this year. So the athletic department is very healthy. It's just the football program right now is in transition and not living up to the expectations set by the university or the fan base.
Okay. Now, I mean, how much do you think it was? I mean, I know you said there was off the field incidences surrounding practice and the bowl game. How much of this do you think had to do with wins and losses? Because I know there was high expectations last year in 8 wins. It's a solid season, but maybe weren't what you guys were hoping for. Year 2, 6 wins. Again, maybe what you guys weren't what you guys were hoping for, but still, first 2 years of a head coach, 8 wins and 6 wins is respectable. You know, you hopefully build on that in year 3. And looking back at, you know, you guys have certainly had seasons where you would have killed for 6 wins, thinking back to the Sylvester Croom era and you know, other times. So I don't – how much straight up did wins and losses have to do with the decision?
Well, I think it really had more to do with the trajectory of the program. You know, last year many people expected Mississippi State to be, you know, a 10-win New Year's Six type team, and you're gifted the number one defense in all of college football with 3 future first-round draft picks, and you lose 5 ball games. And you lose the 5 ball games because you can't get things going offensively, and that's supposed to be your calling card. You know, I think that's really the thing is Joe Moorhead's brought in, considered to be a bit of an offensive guru, and you've got some pieces to work with, and you expect to win 10 and then possibly get 11. You get 8 and lose the bowl game. And then this year people are thinking, okay, it's a bit of a transition year, but what we have returning on offense, it ought to be, especially with Tommy Stevens coming in as a grad transfer, it ought to be an opportunity for Mississippi State, you know, to win 8 or 9 ball games this year. And then in the end, you're fighting for bowl eligibility. I was thinking in the end, the trajectory of the program was headed in the wrong direction. And then when you couple that with the off-the-field issues and things of that nature, there was not a lot of discipline in the program. And then when you pair that up with disappointing results on the field, I think that's how John Cohen kind of arrived at this decision.
Now, I know Rutgers ended up hiring Ciano. How seriously do you think they were considering Joe Moorhead? Were they really wanting to talk to him? I mean, I know leaving Mississippi State for Rutgers would be a lateral move at best, but it's certainly more his neck of the woods. Wouldn't it have been better for all parties maybe to just say, hey, why don't you take that job if you can get it?
Well, you know, number one, financially, it's not even close to being a lateral move or from a prestige standpoint. But, yeah, I don't know that Joe Moorhead was a viable candidate for the job more so than – it's like a reporter puts together a list of potential candidates and says, you know what, if things go south at Mississippi State, Joe Moorhead might be a candidate. And next thing you know, people are off and running. I spoke to Joe directly multiple times, and he goes, I hadn't heard from anybody. My agent hadn't heard from anybody. We're not involved in any of this stuff. And he went out publicly multiple times, and, you know, you can take all that with a grain of salt. You know, it's like you don't expect the sitting head coach to say, you know what, deep down I really wish I was at Rutgers. You know, I mean, that's – they're never going to come clean with that, even if that's what they feel. But there was never any real evidence that Joe Moorhead was really a viable candidate for that job. But I imagine in hindsight, he probably wishes that he was.
I had a question for you, Steve, when it comes to – there's no question about it. We had you on last time talking about Mississippi State baseball. My question to you is, where are the expectations of your fan of Mississippi State when it comes to football? We know that there's a huge power when it comes to baseball, but what about football? What's you said 8 or 9 wins this year. Is that realistic being in the SEC?
Well, I mean, you got to think about, too, your permanent opponent is Kentucky. And, you know, State has kind of dominated that series for much of the last, you know, decade or so. You know, and then you've got Ole Miss and Arkansas. Those, you know, those are a couple of teams that you expect to win more times than not. And then you throw in your 4 non-conference games, and you really feel like that, you know, 6 or 7 wins is the floor rather than the ceiling. And as you guys mentioned earlier, there were decades we couldn't always say that. But – you know, we've beat Auburn, you know, probably every other year. I mean, that's the thing. This time last year, you know, State had beaten Texas A&M and beaten Auburn, you know. And so it's not out of the realm of possibility to expect, you know, 8 wins in a good average year. So I don't think in that respect, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, maybe Mississippi State doesn't know who they are. I think there are a lot of people out there that don't know what Mississippi State expects. And Dan Mullen and Jackie Sherrill have kind of changed the perception of Mississippi State football. Jackie Sherrill took Mississippi State to Atlanta, won the SEC West in 1998. State hadn't been able to get back there, but Dan Mullen comes in 14 and takes State to the number one ranking in America, and then to the Orange Bowl. And so there's a lot of people out there that think, you know what, we don't want to go back to just competing for a Tennessee-level bowl game, going to Nashville or going to just Memphis. They feel like that they can compete for a New Year's Six, not every year, but maybe every 2 or 3 years, maybe be in contention for some bigger things.
Who are some of the candidates that are being talked about seriously for your job? Like, who are the 5 names you're hearing?
Well, there's several names out there, and you know how it is with agent circles. There's always people that want to kind of go in and associate their client's name with your job, whether they get it or not, just to get their name in the paper. And so, you know, Billy Napier out of Louisiana is a name that that has a lot of juice right now. He's come out a couple times and said he's not a candidate, but he is a candidate, and then. Todd Grantham, defensive coordinator at Florida, former Mississippi State defensive coordinator. His son is actually committed to play baseball here at Mississippi State. He is a guy that has had an interview. You know, Steve Sarkisian from Alabama is a name that's kind of been hot as of late. Todd Monken from Army is another. And Troy Calhoun from Air Force, that's another one that's kind of popped up here as of late that appears to have some real juice. And so it looks like State's going to have, you know, have some quality candidates here when they get ready to make a decision, which I think will happen at some point in the next week. And then you'll have another opening somewhere else, which is kind of atypical for this time of year.
And you mentioned Todd Monk and Troy Calhoun. That obviously brings up an interesting follow-up question. Are you guys considering running the option down there, or would you expect them to change their offenses?
Well, you know, that's the thing too. Calhoun, you know, former, you know, Texans coordinator, and he coached at Denver. I mean, you know, he's pretty skilled.
Right.
At all different offenses. I don't think Mississippi State expects to run the option, but I think you've got to run some spread option offense type stuff down here. And, you know, because Monk is one of those guys, too, that, you know, I've had people tell me that he's not married to that scheme. That's one of the things you have to do at service academies. I don't know that I believe that or not.
But, you realize who his first cousin is.
Absolutely. That's the thing that's so wild about this about this coaching search is there's so many people out there that have connections to these guys, whether they've recruited this territory or not. There are so many people out there that know exactly who you are, and there are so many coaches that will call and tell you, hey, this guy's the best guy for your program, or there'll be some runner for some agent. There's no shortage of people with advice this time of year.
I'm going to tell you, if you can get Coach Monken from Army and he can get Todd to come down to the OC, you'd be on to something.
Ain't that
oh, yeah.
True?
Steve, I had a question for you. I didn't hear the name. I saw a USA Today article getting ready for our interview with you. What about a former East Carolina head coach who's done an excellent job at there at La Tech with Skip Holtz? What do you think about him? Is he a serious candidate or just a name thrown out there?
Well, I think he is a potential candidate. I wouldn't say he's in the top grouping, but, you know, Skip Holtz is a guy that Mississippi State fans are very familiar with. They played Louisiana Tech a couple times. You know, since he's been there, and you guys remember, there was a time when Skip Holtz was there. That was the hottest head coaching name in the country. And so, he's a guy who's won a lot of football games. But I would say he's probably in that second grouping. Probably
okay.
Some things need to happen in order for him to kind of move into the top.
Right.
Another name I wanted to mention to you, Steve, I think this guy's name was thrown out there by guys like Bruce Feldman with Fox Sports. so the name Joe Judge, I know he's a Mississippi State alum. His wife's a Mississippi State alum. His experience has been largely at the pro level with the New England Patriots and largely as a special teams coordinator, a little experience with the wide receivers. Is he someone that would fall in that second tier?
Now, I think he's probably in the first tier, to be honest with you, because he is a Mississippi State alum, and he has a tremendous amount of respect and support. Matter of fact, Jackie Sherrill is kind of leading the charge behind the scenes, and a lot of former Mississippi State players have thrown their support behind Joe Judge, and he's interviewing for the head coaching position for the New York Giants as well. And so he is a rising name in NFL circles, but he has told me personally this has always been his dream job. And so at some point he does want to be the head coach at Mississippi State, and there are a lot of people that are hoping this is that time.
And one more name I'll throw out there that I've heard mentioned who I'm shocked hasn't got another job yet, not that there's anything wrong with being the head coach at UAB, but Bill Clark.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Bill Clark is one of those guys, too, that has won at a place that historically has not had a lot of winning programs. And not to mention, so much respect for Bill for sticking with UAB. They shut down the program. He had opportunities to leave. He elected to stay and has built that program back up, and they compete this year in the Conference USA Championship game. And so, you know, State could do a whole lot worse than a guy like Bill Clark, but I just haven't heard a lot of traction around that name this go-around. But there are a lot of fans that are asking that same question. Why not Bill Clark?
Yeah,
Steve, I was going to put you on this.
Yeah, I was going to say, he doesn't seem to come up as a serious candidate for very many jobs. Somebody's going to hire him one day, and going to be glad they did.
I agree. And you know what? Maybe he's not interested in moving on from UAB. I mean, there's, you know, that's one of those things you begin to think about, too. I mean, there are, you know, Brad Peterson wouldn't leave, you know, Boise State for years and years and years, and he finally took the job, you know, at Washington there. Sometimes people just like their situation where they are. They have family considerations or something of that nature, and that might be the case with Bill. But every time there's a job that pops up in the Southeast, people always mention him as a candidate, but it never seems that it goes anywhere.
Steve, that's the thing is when it comes to the coaches, as far as I wanted to ask you some baseball questions while we have you on, obviously with Mississippi State, I know Bubba, your dad went down there, was talking about how great the atmosphere, and hopefully we can play you guys again. I'd love to get down there and there. But what do you guys have coming back this year? What are your expectations? How are things looking for on the baseball diamond?
Yeah, a lot of people are excited about this team. You know, State's been Omaha back-to-back years and really felt like last year they had a real chance to advance. And, you know, Vanderbilt trips them up in the SEC tournament and in the College World Series, eventual national champion. And that team was loaded. But this Mississippi State team coming back, going to have one of the best offenses in the country. They feel great about their Friday night starter with JT Ginn. Got a couple of young guys they're going to put on the weekends, and that's what we're going to tell the whole season. Christian McLeod's the guy that's got major league stuff and size throwing on Saturday, and Eric Sarantola, Team Canada guy, will throw on Sunday. And so he's going to be kind of a volume guy because control is a bit of an issue with him. But if they can get good weekend pitching, then I guess that's the case for everybody in the country, you know. But if the weekend pitching holds out, we think this is a team that's capable of getting back to Omaha.
I had a question regarding Cliff Godwin being the head coach of East Carolina. A lot of people, being he's a local guy, lives, I mean, originally from Snow Hill, Greene County, maybe 25 minutes, 30 minutes from Greenville. He certainly gets being what a Pirate's all about. I've always heard if he ever left Greenville, he would go to the SEC. Is that something, is he well-respected in SEC country when it comes to baseball?
Oh, very much so. You know, and that's another thing, too, like Mississippi State people, I believe, they're not just fans of Mississippi State. They're fans of the college game. You know, and Cliff Godwin obviously had a good run at Ole Miss, and then he's done so well at ECU. And you know, I think ECU is one of his programs, too, that you look at what he's done there, and you always feel like they're one or two recruits away from really breaking through. And I know your folks probably feel the same way, but yeah, there's a lot of respect for him down here because our fans are such fans of the game. They follow coaches, and every time there's a coaching search, you know, Cliff Godwin's name comes up. And I think – that's the ultimate sign of respect that people want your guy to come be their coach, whether he makes the move or not.
Yeah. No doubt about it, Steve. And as far as you recruiting for Mississippi State, going back, jumping back to football, the gridiron, how was the recruiting class this year?
That was really good. I mean, they've already got, you know, 22 signees, and so there aren't There were no verbal commitments that elected to wait out the process and sign in February. Five of those high school guys have already been early enrollment guys, and they also had about a half dozen junior college guys. And so a lot of this class is going to be going through spring practice. And, you know, even with the coaching change, you know, the coaching staff's doing a good job staying in contact with those guys. And, you know, we've touched base with them. And as of now, nobody's looking to get a release from their letter of intent. And I think guys like Will Rogers have really worked hard to have those kids not just committed to Mississippi State, but committed to each other. And so they feel good about where they stand. Probably need to pick up three or four guys in February to kind of close out the class and stay in the top 25.
And to close this out, one more question. How soon do you expect this coaching search to be wrapped up? Any idea?
Well, I'm hoping in the next 15 minutes or so, but I don't think that's going to be the case. You know, yeah, it's a lot of work, as you guys know. I mean, we spent a lot of time on the phone, and I was out of town this weekend with my family, but still had to kind of work this part of it. But, yeah, I mean, I think this week we'll have a decision and probably announce it before the end of the week. I mean, you know, we're only a couple weeks away from the contact period opening back up and coaches having a chance to hit the road and recruit and have those in-home visits. And, again, as I mentioned, State's got a few spots left to fill. And so, yeah, I mean, sooner rather than later. And there's a couple guys out there, of course, that I think are, you know, a little more game ready than others, but yeah, State needs to make a decision pretty quickly, and we feel like that'll come this week.
It create a lot of traffic on your page in the meantime.
Oh, no doubt, absolutely, yeah, and subscriptions have been great. You know, our business is doing great, and I've said many times that there's two things that make things great when you're in our business, and that's winning big or changing coaches. Both of those things, you know, brings people to your site.
Yeah, I know. Quickly, I was going to mention our 24/7 site ran by Steve and I go. When we had our coaching change, we fired Scotty Montgomery on Thursday and hired Mike Houston on Sunday. And I go said that didn't do much for business.
Yeah, sometimes that people, you know, drama sells. You know, people, the vacuum of information, people want to know what's going on. And we feel like we've got a good handle on things and got good sources, but sometimes you never know. But, you know, it's the passion of college football and really college athletics and all of sport. And I think, you know, when people get plugged in like that, we're just happy to provide them information and provide them a place where they can feel part of the community.
Yep.
Steve, we really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Coming on. But before we let you go, tell our listeners where they can follow you on Twitter and then also where they can read your work and about your website.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm on all forms of social media at Scout Steve R. And then, of course, jeanspage.com. We're the Mississippi State affiliate on 247 Sports Network.
All right, Steve, thank you so much. And good luck on the coaching search. And we look forward to seeing how that pans out.
You guys take care.
Appreciate you.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you, Steve, very much. In fact, Steve, we liked having him on last year. I'll tell you the reason I like him is not only is he knowledgeable, we have and we won't say any names. We have people that we know that, and I'm not talking about the people guests we have on, but there's always people that they pretend they know everything. Steve knows a lot and very well connected in the program. And Bubba, I will tell you that Steve knows a lot of his stuff. And I really like the fact that Mississippi State, for example, appreciates Cliff Godwin. That over and over and over again, I hear people talk nationally about Cliff Godwin and the job he did in LSU and Mississippi and, you know, in SEC programs. I just really like the fact that as much as I love Coach Godwin, it's nice to hear, you know, all of us love Coach Godwin, but it's nice to hear people nationally talk great about the coach that you love. I mean, that there's nothing better than that.
Absolutely. I mean, if you follow college baseball closely, how can you not be aware of Cliff Godwin and be impressed by Cliff Godwin? I mean, it's a guy that steadily worked his way up through the business and did a tremendous job as assistant coaches at a number of prestigious programs. And then all he's done is won since he's been at East Carolina. I mean, we had that one bad season where we had a ton of stuff happen, but he took the program to back-to-back hosting opportunities, and that's something that had never been done in our program's history, as rich as our tradition was. And he's taken us to a couple of super regionals. So this program is on very solid footing, and it's only going to continue to get better under Cliff's leadership.
And by the way, folks, speaking of college baseball, Bubba and I put our heads together,
and we're going to do like we did last year. We'll do a college baseball preview coming up in a few weeks, right, Bubba?
Yeah, last year we had a heck of a preview on catching up with a lot of coaches across the state of North Carolina. Baseball in the college ranks and just baseball in general, for that matter, is very good in our state. And we caught up with Mike Fox in North Carolina, also Chris Pollard of Duke, Kermit Smith up at App State, who's doing a heck of a job turning that program around. Hasn't necessarily shown up in the wins and losses yet, but you can see if you really look at that program, the way they've progressed under that staff's leadership. And then we'll catch up with obviously Mark Scaff, retired at UNC Wilmington. We enjoyed having him on the show a few times last year, and also Justin Hare with Campbell. We'll catch up with all of those guys and probably more. So we'll have, if you love college baseball, we'll talk to several coaches from around the state and have a heck of a preview for you coming up here in a few weeks.
No doubt, and we get a lot of compliments. I wanted to mention that. We get a lot of compliments for folks that doing previews and different things. If we did everything the same as everybody else, it would be no point in doing it. And I'm sure they would say the same thing if they were on their broadcast. So there's no point if we're going to try to copy a certain media outlet. It would be no point to do that. So we try to have our own niche, as they say. Bubba, I tell you what, very excited. Want to remind fans, by the way, ecupirates.com. Get your tickets. We have a working on a promotion ourselves. We can't talk about it right now. But we're going to finalize that, and probably by the end of the week we'll be able to talk about it, right, Bubba? So people just stay tuned on the podcast, and definitely a big promotion we've got coming up for the show.
Yeah, definitely stay tuned for that. It's something that
I think people will like.
There's no doubt it's going to have a huge response.
No doubt. And by the way, folks, I want to remind you, our Pirate Cruise coming up for the Sports Objective. That'll be July the 16th through the 20th out of Charleston to the Bahamas. And you can actually, if you're interested in it, you can call, off the top of my head, I know her number, 919-830-4161. That's Dana Shrink, Dana's Global Travel. And I'm very excited. We have some interest there. So I want people to join us. So we're going to do a podcast on Carnival Cruise Lines to allow us to do a podcast, and you'll be a part of that, and maybe some of you can join in. Maybe we can't Pirate Al up there, who knows, but we're going to have a lot of fun. Great to have pirates on a ship, and no doubt July 16th to the 20th, again, definitely come aboard. It's going to be a lot of fun. And Bubba, I want to remind folks too, February 1st is the Baseball Bank. We'll get your tickets, 1-800-ECU, ecupirates.com. You can go there. I believe it's going to be the Student Center. Again, I'm going to go there that night and take my kids. That's going to be fantastic. So look forward to it. That's going to be a lot of fun. Again, that's February 1st, and that'll be at, is it 7 o'clock, Bubba? 6 or 7? I can't remember the date. I know the date.
I do not recall the exact time, but like you said, my parents have attended that event for a few years in a row now. I've actually not had the opportunity to attend since it turned into a more formal event. I went to meet the Pirates during the Billy Godwin era, but since Cliff's taken over, and just it hasn't worked out with my schedule and things that I've had going on with my kids' ball games and so forth to be able to make it. But my parents have just raved over what a tremendous event it was, even when it was back in Minji's, and it's been even better since it's moved to the ECU Student Center.
No doubt about it. So good luck to the Pirates this season on the gridiron, and obviously the court, and obviously as far as baseball is concerned, on the baseball diamond, it's going to be a huge year for 2020. We appreciate, by the way, Bub, I want to mention before we go, one more thing, and I want to thank you, Bubba, for all your hard work. I want to thank Kyle for his hard work. Bubba, can we go over to the tote board? Can we toot our horn for just 1 minute? I know that you have the totals. Can you give me the totals for the number of listens for 2019?
Yep, in 2019, after being just shy of 21,000 in 2018 in 10 months, because we, of course, launched the podcast in March of 2018.
Right.
So in 2019, we had 43,900 listeners. So
wow.
we definitely more than doubled what we did in our inaugural year.
And no pressure there for 2020 to keep that movement going. But I just want to take the time to thank a lot of fans who we don't get a chance enough to thank you so much for. We're very appreciative and grateful. We're three guys who have regular jobs. We love this. And, hey, we're the only ECU Pirate podcast. So if you like podcasts like I do, Bubba and Kyle, we all three of us listen to podcasts. Then there are other podcasts have tried. They haven't made it. But we're your one that you can always count on. We're you know, Bubba, I was thinking about this the other day for us. If you're part of Pirate Nation and you love podcasts, we're Old Faithful. You know, sometimes like the Timex watch, you take a lick and keep on ticking. It may not be a Rolex, but that's okay. I appreciate we've had a Rolex of a show, I can tell you that, with Jim Lighthall for a play-by-play voice for basketball for USF Pirates Big Game. And then, well, of course, thank you to Robin House, former letter winner for the Pirates, under three coaches, under Coach Steele, Eddie Payne, and, of course, the first season of Joe Dooley. And I know he's back in town, and we wish him all the best and look forward to have him back on. And then, of course, Gene Page, the 24/7 for Mississippi State, Steve Robertson. Thank you, sir, for coming on. And thank you, Kyle from LaGrange. Thank you, Bubba, very much. Look forward to having you back in the next couple of days for another show. Until in the meantime, folks, you've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.